Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive impact in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors, as well as several authors. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Despite those physical challenges, I'm very well known for always answering amazing when asked how I am doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we are the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find us online at cbj.ca, and you can find out more about me at my website, which is tall.com. My guest today is Jay Miller, and Jay is a speech coach providing training in vocal development, public speaking, and media training for a wide range of corporate and private clients. He has over 30 years' experience in the field of voice and speech and over 10 years in private practice. He is consulted by the Globe and Mail, the National Post, the Toronto Star, Elle Canada, and Chatelaine, and has appeared on City TV and Discovery Health. He enjoys working with dedicated leaders and successful professionals who are enthusiastic, open-minded, achievement-oriented, and committed to personal growth. Welcome to the show today, Jay.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Such an important topic for so many people, not just people who are public speakers, professionally paid to do it on a regular basis, but so many people in a business career are going to have to stand up and speak in front of a group. And it's also, as you know, Jay, public speaking is the number one fear of people in every list. I think drowning is second, so people would rather drown than speak in public. And so how did you get into this field of voice and speech training?
That's a bit of a long story. I'll try to give you the condensed version. Growing up, I wanted to be a professional singer, and when it became clear that that probably wasn't going to be my career, I decided to go into, on the advice of a career coach, I decided to go into speech therapy because I knew there was a niche in that field for people who were dealing with a professional voice, like singers or broadcasters and so forth. And so I thought that would make it, you know, a natural sort of combination with my interests. And then once I was finishing up my undergraduate training in that field, it seemed a little too clinical for me, so I switched and did my graduate training as a voice coach for actors. And then when I realized that I didn't want to be in theater and working with actors for the rest of my life, I landed in private practice for business professionals.
Which is an important market because these people are not necessarily full-time professionally using their speech and their voice. But when they do, it's often extremely important. So what is the main obstacle, Jay, that you feel it confronts the average public speaker?
Well, when it comes to public speaking and presentation, Tom, overall, the main thing going on here is that people just can't get completely comfortable when they're speaking in front of a group of people. Now, there might be a lot of reasons for that, right? It might be a lack of technique. It might be nervousness. It might be a lack of preparation. But for some reason, they're not able to be completely comfortable and therefore fully engaged and interacting and really generous with their listeners.
Exactly, and that is, for, as you said, whatever reason, it's labeled as fear, but it could be a fear for any number of reasons. And I've been to enough Toastmasters meetings, which is an organization that helps people with their public speaking, and you see people that just start, and you can see the fear that so many people have and how they stumble and how they often start with tons of ums and ahs in their speech, but over time they improve, their voice gets stronger, they look more confident, they use fewer ums and ahs. And so is there something that helps people get from that first stage of fear and lack of confidence in themselves? Because tell you the truth, that when I speak, I still have fear and nervousness, but I've been able to channel it so that I can still speak and make an impact and be engaged with the audience without concentrating on, boy, I'm really nervous. Do you have a few tips for people on that, on helping to overcome the fear or at least deal with the fear and still speak professionally?
You already mentioned one thing, and that is to get a lot of experience. Because public speaking is something that you do, not something that you just learn about in your head. And so the more opportunities you have to do it, like in Toastmasters groups, for example, that's going to move you a long way toward dealing with that nervousness. And you also alluded to another thing that's really helpful, and that is for people to learn how to put their focus in the right place. You know, public speaking is really all about getting a message to one person or to a group of people. That's the primary reason for doing it. But when you're up front and you're, you know, everyone's looking at you and you're the only one doing the talking, it's easy to sort of fall into this assumption that it's all about you. And that misplaced focus is a big cause of a lot of the anxiety and nervousness that people feel. And if they can just shift that and remember that they're up there for a reason, they've got a job to do, then that can help take some of that focus off of themselves and help them really get down to the task at hand and deal with it, or in spite of the nervousness, maybe would be a good way to say it.
Right, and that helps with, as I had mentioned, that you're going to be nervous, but if you can direct it positively and, as you said, focus on the message and maybe the person it's intended to get to and how they're supposed to take it and what they're supposed to learn from it, rather than on, look at everybody's looking at me. You're there for a reason to speak, but they're looking at you to get what they want out of the presentation, not at necessarily at yourself. They're looking to the speaker for the information they want to get out of it. And so I hadn't thought of that, but that's a great way to do it, is stop taking the focus off of yourself and everybody paying attention to you and onto the message and the intended recipient. Because normally you don't get asked to speak unless you really have something to say on that particular topic they want you to speak about. And so deliver the message you're intended to deliver and stop thinking about everybody staring at you making fun of you or picking out points about you. That's not where the focus should be, should it?
That's right. That's right. Now, there are other things that we could talk about, like some physical strategies for managing nervous energy, because I really do believe that if you can't get comfortable in your body, there's probably not much of a chance you're going to be comfortable mentally or emotionally or in relationship with your listeners. So, of course, there are things like relaxation and breathing techniques and all those sorts of things that we can put in place, which I also find then gives the speaker something constructive to focus on while they're up there. So those kinds of things can work as well. But you're right. It's if you can shift the focus onto the listeners, then it becomes less of a performance thing and more of a conversation or a relationship thing, and that makes a world of difference to how you operate as a speaker.
Exactly, and there's so many things on stage that someone could do, as you had mentioned, about, you know, that they can look at to feel comfortable. And some people might be leaning on a lectern, then their hands are not shaking. Some people, you know, you see their hands. I just saw someone in November in Ireland do a talk, and you could see he's holding the papers, hands are shaking. So there are some ways, I imagine, that you can suggest people stand, and how they hold their hands and their arms and their body when they're speaking to make them feel more stable and more confident and also less visible to the audience that you're scared out of your wits.
Right. You know, Tom, one of the simplest things you can do is just stand on both feet. And it, as simple as that sounds, you'd be surprised at how few speakers do that. And
really?
How you wouldn't believe it. You know, people are standing on one leg, or they're bouncing up and down on their toes, or they're pacing back and forth for no reason at all. It seems like people will do anything to just really get on the ground and get planted and do the job that's in front of them. So one of the first things I'm looking for when I'm evaluating any speaker is, does she have her feet on the ground? And the second thing would be, is she breathing? Because if those two things aren't happening, anything else I might possibly suggest would just be details. So, able to stand on both feet, I've seen people's people speak with a stronger voice, slow down the rate of their speech. I've seen them feel more confident. You know, I've seen them speak with deeper voices and become more engaged just from getting both feet on the ground. It's unbelievable.
Oh, wow. And what a simple thing, and yet you're so right, because I read a book and listened to a CD program on body language, and it said one of the easiest, simplest ways to see how if people are nervous or not confident is look at their legs and their feet. And because people can sometimes block their face expressions, maybe even their hands, but their feet they don't pay attention to. And you're right, if you see people jittery and bouncing or on the balls of their feet or on one leg, they're not going to feel as solid as if their feet are planted. And then that gives their body a lot more confidence, doesn't it? And then, as you said, that will even be affected in their voice as well.
That's right. That's exactly right. A lot of things start happening right if you can get a good foundation under you.
So keep your feet steady on the ground, not bouncing up and down or not on the balls of your feet or not on one leg and not even necessarily pacing up and down the stage. Yeah. And this is where you see, I see a variety of speakers. Brian Tracy usually just stands in one spot. He's not up and down, up and down, up and down, one spot, delivering great information. Then you see someone like a Zig Ziglar, when he used to speak, he'd be back and forth across that stage. You'd be tired just watching him. And so different styles, but if you're not a professional at this, feet planted on the ground in one spot is going to make you feel most comfortable, right?
That's exactly right. I always get the question, well, isn't it a good thing to move around when you're speaking? And of course it is. But, you know, my answer always is, it's a great thing to move, but you still have to be grounded. So it's easier to learn how to be grounded. It's easier to learn that feeling starting with your feet on the ground. Once you know that feeling, then yes, of course, you can move around and you won't lose your connection to the ground. But a lot of times what I see is people who think that movement is interesting to watch, that it brings energy to their speech, but is not in any way connected to their message. And everything is just up. It's not grounded.
Yeah. And now what about the voice? Because you can hear quivering in a voice that's nervous. You see people speak in public, and you know from the ums and ahs and the quivering of their voice that they are nervous. And yet that's probably not an easy thing to fix. Do you Do you have a few tips on that for people who are going to be nervous? I know they tend to speak faster, and then you also tend to hear them in a quivering voice, and also you often see them just reading straight from a prepared text, which is not really a comfortable feeling for the audience all the time.
Right. Yeah, Tom, if your voice is starting to quiver, it might not be one of the easiest things to fix. But what I want to see happening, first of all, is that the person doesn't let the quiver interfere with their full engagement. I want to see the person pushing through the quiver. So I just happened at a master class that I gave a week or two ago. One of the speakers, it was a big issue for them, quivering in their voice. It's one of the reasons why they came to me in the first place. And it was there just a little bit. But what was really great was that she didn't, most people will tend to clamp up and sort of try to pull back and force that quivering to stop. And that is the wrong thing to do because the quiver is caused by muscle tension in the first place. So what I want to see them doing is really generous with their voice, giving it away. It's just sort of, you know, we hear people talking about stepping into the fear and working through the fear. Well, it's really the same principle. You need to really sort of speak through that quiver and make sure you're giving yourself fully. And if that's happening, I guarantee you the audience won't care if your voice is quivering.
Exactly, exactly. And if it doesn't interrupt with the message, and the message is clear and gets the point across, people aren't going to care so much about the quivering voice. They'll understand it because everybody in the audience will be afraid of public speaking as well in most cases.
That's right. And, you know, Tom, I've seen this happen time and time again, that really what needs to happen at the end of the day when you're speaking is that people need to see you, right? We need to see who you really are. We need to see you as a unique individual out there, making yourself available to us and giving yourself to us. And if you can succeed at doing that, you know, if you can succeed at, maybe we would just say speaking from the heart, right? We will forgive all sorts of mistakes because there's nothing more fascinating than another human being. So I have seen, you know, amateur speakers. In fact, when TED Talks just first started to become well-known, one of the top 10 TED Talks was a young woman from New York City who was speaking on how she was doing urban renewal in the Bronx. And it was obvious that she was not an experienced speaker. You know, it was obvious that she wasn't totally comfortable. But it didn't matter because she was showing us who she really was and speaking about something that she was passionate about. And so it ends up in one of the top 10 TED Talks.
and as you said, not a polished speaker, not someone who did it professionally, and it was even obvious she wasn't comfortable, but because she was passionate about her topic and knew it so well, it enthralled the audience.
That's exactly right.
Neat. And so, now the voice training is kind of intriguing to me because you'll hear people a lot of time, if they listen to themselves on a recording, they'll be like, oh, I sound awful. I didn't know I sounded like that. And yet, suppose you're not a singer or an actor who has to portray different voices, maybe different accents. But what if you're not a vocal professional? What does it matter about the sound of your voice when you're delivering a speech?
It matters because the sound of your voice will affect how your listeners feel, even if they're not thinking about the sound of your voice. So regardless of what you're saying, that the voice that's behind the words will create an emotional response in the listeners. And so that response can be helping you as a speaker, it can be working for you, helping to get that message across, or it can be working against you. And so it doesn't matter if you're a broadcaster or if you're an actor or, you know, if you're, you know, Joe Average in the boardroom, if that voice is in some way sending a message that isn't congruent with what you're trying to say, then, you know, we need to pay attention to it. So people don't have to have perfect, you know, voices, right? All we're looking for is a voice that's strong, that's clear, that's resonant or rich, and that's effective. You know, a voice that communicates well with others. Because who cares if it sounds good? If you're not communicating well, then it doesn't matter.
Exactly, and there's so much people comment on the voice. I must have Zig Ziglar on the mind, but I'm thinking I've lent CDs and videos of him to other people, and they would often comment, "I just don't like his accent. I don't like his voice." And so here you're giving profound, interesting, life-changing, potentially information, and people are focused on, well, I don't like his accent, and I don't like his voice. And so here his message gets lost because people don't like a voice or an accent. And so, as you said, so important to have a clear voice, a strong enough voice that people can hear you. They're not straining to hear and missing every other word. And so people normally wouldn't think of the voice part if they're not a public professional speaker, and yet so much, as you say, voices bring emotion out of people, and so you want to make sure that at least your voice is not detracting from your message, so that people are saying, did you hear their voice, instead of, did you hear what they had to say?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you hear it said in sales all the time that it's not about what you say, it's about how you make people feel. And that's not just true in sales. That's true in every interaction in our lives, professionally or personally. Right? It really comes down to there's always something going on under the surface that has to do with how we're making people feel. That's going to determine whether they work with us or against us, whether they open up to us or close down, whether they, you know, move with us or pull away from us. It's that there's that unspoken underlying feeling thing always going on, and your voice has a powerful effect on that dynamic.
Exactly, and people can understand that by thinking of their mothers and their different tones of voice that their mothers had, and how it could certainly bring out certain emotions in you by a different tone of voice. And so it is so important to the emotions that the listener is feeling at the time. And I so agree with you, as you had mentioned previously, too, about speaking passionately from the heart. I know I spoke once for the Napoleon Hill Foundation where I used a PowerPoint presentation and I was kind of reading from notes, and then I had done another one where I just spoke impromptu, my story, my life, no PowerPoints, and then I was told after, always speak just from the heart. You're not a PowerPoint guy. Your message comes across stronger if you just share yourself and your story rather than trying to make points out of it on a PowerPoint. And so that's important as well. If you're comfortable speaking and speaking off the cuff or, you know, with fewer notes, PowerPoints and those kind of things don't always increase the value of a presentation depending on what you're presenting. Some people it does, some people it doesn't. So, you know, consider that as well also, right? As you said, if someone shares from their heart and shares their life, people are interested in that.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, there will be times when we need PowerPoint, when the content will demand some visual reinforcement. But I agree that if that's not necessary, then we want to see the real person.
Okay, so now let's say someone doesn't deliver speeches professionally. Are there some 3, 4, 5 tips that you can give people to be a better speaker or even a presenter? You know, they could be presenting information to their department even. So this is not even a speaker, but it could be more of a presenter or a manager in a company that has to present information. Are there, as I said, 3, 4, 5 tips that they can look out for to make themselves a better speaker or presenter?
Yes. The first thing that comes to mind is prepare, 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 prepare. So many of the issues I see as a speech coach can be traced back to a lack of preparation. Virtually every speaker that walks into my office for coaching walks out again with the realization that they weren't as prepared as they thought they were. And when I talk about preparation, that includes rehearsal. It seems like such an obvious thing, Tom, but you would be surprised at how few people actually spend time rehearsing their presentation or their speech. So when they actually get up to perform it, they've never heard it out loud before. Of course that's going to be stressful, right? And why would you want your first time going through the presentation to be the one that matters? So it's such a simple thing, but it's overlooked all the time. If you just rehearse, you will automatically get better. It will get better every time you go through it. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Sounds a little obvious, but it doesn't get the attention it deserves. You need to practice. You know, there was a guy by the name of Adam Robinson wrote a book called What Smart Students Know, and it changed my college career. And one of the things that I've never forgotten from that book was, he said, the way to prepare for a test is to practice doing exactly what you're going to be doing on the test. And in most cases, that means writing out answers to questions with a clock ticking. But he said, how many students actually prepare for tests that way? You know, we take our highlighter and underline the textbook, or we read through our notes. He said, how many exams have you ever taken that involve the use of a highlighter? And the same thing applies to public speaking, right? You're not prepared unless you've practiced doing exactly what you're going to do on the day of the speech. And in most cases, that means standing up on your feet and talking through the material out loud.
Exactly. And then I often record it, and so I play it in my car so that when I come to speak, I've heard it so many times that the words are like embedded in my brain, and it's my own voice. So I feel that I probably learn it or take it in better when it's my own voice. And so, yeah, rehearse in advance, record it, listen to it over and over to get the words proper. But, wow, what a silly thing that people don't prepare in advance and rehearse in advance. And prepare there's a fair lot of preparation. I heard a few pastors had mentioned that, you know, to deliver a 45-minute sermon often takes, like, 10 hours to prepare, to word it properly, to practice it a number of times, to deliver it correctly. And so there is more preparation than people would even think, I imagine, needs to be done to do a really good job.
Right. It's so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that once you have your content organized and on paper, that you're ready for the presentation. But you might only be about halfway there at that point, because writing a speech or preparing a presentation is a completely different skill set from actually delivering the speech or the presentation. Right? Writing and speaking are two different things, and most of us miss that distinction. So we assume that once we have our notes ready, we're ready to go. And then we stand up and open our mouth and realize that, oh, it's awkwardly worded, it doesn't flow, and that's too late.
Yeah, there's no humor, there's no interaction.
Yep.
And so now people have prepared, they've rehearsed it in advance, they're ready to deliver it. What are some other tips now to help them be a better speaker or presenter?
Remember that it's a conversation, that it's a relationship. It's never, ever just about the words. You're up there, you are creating an experience for your listeners, so you have to invite them into that experience with you. And so, you know, getting up and just speaking the words, you know, and hoping people understand what you're saying, that's setting the bar so low. You actually need to draw them into the experience with you. So I'm always saying to the speakers that I coach, if you feel it, we will feel it. But if you're not feeling it, we won't feel anything. And so there has to be this, the speaker has to be immersed in what they're saying and experiencing what they're saying at the moment that they're articulating it for their listeners. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And so would that mean involving, getting them involved in the conversation at all, maybe by asking a few questions or getting examples from people? Because people will think when it's a conversation that the other people have to be talking. So how do you do a conversation and perhaps even get the audience a little bit involved as well?
That it might involve that, Tom, but then, of course, it might not. There might be times,
yeah,
you know, when the context in which you're speaking doesn't allow for that. But what I meant was, for example, maybe I can explain it with an example. If a speaker stands in front of a room and says, we're very happy that we exceeded last quarter's projections by such and such an amount, but they say it with a blank face and a flat voice, and so you don't feel anything, right? Their words are at odds with what they're actually experiencing, and so there's nothing compelling about it. So a speaker has to do more than just speak the words. They have to feel what they're saying, or to fall back on a cliche, they have to mean what they're saying. And
that makes so much sense.
Always happens.
Yeah, and only 7% of conversation or communication is the words you use. The rest is the tone of voice, the posture of your body, a lot of nonverbal things. And so, as you say, your words, if they're not delivered properly with the right emotion, they're just words.
That's exactly right. And so that sort of leads me to an overall way that we can think about this. And that's this, that it's all about a connection. And I think that connection happens at three different levels. You have to be connected to yourself. You have to be connected to your message. And you have to be connected to your listeners. And I found that any problem with any speech that I've ever coached is ultimately going to fall into one or more of those three categories. Not connected to yourself, not connected to your message, or not connected to your listeners.
Wow. And so those are three easy points to work with and identify in the process. Now, what are, like, the people that come to see you, what are their primary issues that they seek training from you for? Are these, like, executive, professional, highly paid people? Is it middle managers? Or what issues cause people to say, I need some voice and speech training?
Right. Well, it's pretty wide range, Tom. I joke with people that if you name the profession, I've probably worked with someone from it. But in general, it might be upwardly mobile professionals. And by that, I mean people who haven't quite reached their goal yet. Sometimes I often find that people who are already at the top don't feel a lot of motivation to develop themselves. They've got their hands full already.
Right.
But, people who are aspiring to that, they've got a fire into them, and they, you know, they're anxious to find ways to enhance their own potential, and so they've got a real motivation to look for this type of training. So, yeah, just management, but, you know, I work with students, and sometimes I work with people who are already at the top. If they're not working on a specific presentation, so if we just set that aside as sort of one aspect of the work, but if they're coming for more ongoing training, generally there are about five things that are going on. Either they're struggling to be clear, so I can help them with that. Or they don't feel confident when they're in front of other people. Another thing that's very common is that they're talking too fast and they don't know what to do about that.
Yeah.
Or the quality of their voice needs needs some work. Either it's too high, or it's too nasal, or it's too raspy, or whatever. And then there are those people who are finding that their voice just isn't strong enough to either support the kind of speaking they have to do or to reinforce the role that they're trying to play. So those five things, clarity, confidence, rate, resonance, and strength, those are the main things that I work with all the time. And then if you would combine people who just want to speak with more impact or have more presence, if you would combine those two things, impact and presence, that would be up there with the top five.
And so a number of those things did have to deal with the quality of the voice. And so people are, I wonder, and then I was been thinking about, like, how can people really, can they change their voice? And would the change be solely for when they're delivering a presentation or a speech, or and then go back to their regular voice? How does that work? How can people change their voice? What is the process involved, and is the process only for when they're delivering a speech, or do some people need to change their voice for everything they do, or most things?
Right. I love that question. I'm so glad you asked it. Here's what I find. Most people are speaking with a voice that's the product of years or even decades of habit. So it feels so natural to them that they assume that they were born with that voice. But the reality is that it's probably not the voice they were born with. It's the voice that they've reinforced over time. And so yes, you can change your voice. Most people are only speaking with just a tiny fraction of their whole voice. And so what we have to do is, it's a very physical process. We have to help them feel their voice in a new way. So it's not about reading books and, maybe doing one exercise and having things be different from then on. It's about cultivating a different feeling whenever you open your mouth to speak. And yes, at the beginning of the training, you might only experience that voice during your lesson. Maybe 3 months later, you'll be able to turn that voice on for the duration of an important meeting. Maybe a year later, you'll realize that you're speaking in a different voice pretty much all the time. And, of course, all of that progression just depends on how much a person is practicing and paying attention to the process, right?
But of course, yeah.
It is very habitual, you know. Nobody teaches us how to speak. You know,
no.
We've been talking since we were, 18 months old? And nobody sits us down and explains the basics to us. But that doesn't mean we're stuck with where we are now. Everyone has the potential for a better voice. And if they just, the techniques aren't hard. It's just a matter of learning to pay attention to something that you've never paid attention to before.
And so, like changing any habit, then you pay attention to it, you practice it, and over time it becomes just something second nature to people.
That's right. Right? You take those old feelings and replace them with new sensations that feel better. And then you have a motivation, a built-in motivation to move toward that, right? So
That can be so powerful, because so many people don't have a naturally strong voice. They're not always. My wife often says I need to speak louder in person, one-on-one with her. When I go on stage, I'm able to boom my voice or change it from my normal tone. But those are so important. Now, what about, especially in Canada and Toronto, where I live, so multicultural a city, is there anything it can do to help people with, like, accents, broken English? They're going to learn the language, but is there things they can do with their voice when, let's say, English is not their mother tongue, but they can help with their accent, their how people understand them. Is that something you've encountered or helped people with as well?
Yes, actually, in years gone by, I did a lot of accent reduction or accent modification work, depending on what terminology you want to use. But here's what I found over the years, Tom, that in most cases, the ultimate goal is not to be accent-free, right? Because if we're speaking a second or third or fourth language as an adult, we're probably not going to be accent-free.
And a lot of people like accents.
That's right. So the ultimate goal is clarity. We just want to be able to interact in the world without people struggling to understand or comprehend what we're trying to say. And what I found was that in most cases, for most people, if we could just get them to strengthen their voice a bit, because when they're speaking a second language, they tend to soften their voice a bit. And if we could just get them to slow down, because most foreign speakers of English are trying to speak at the same rate as the native speakers, and then that prevents them from being as accurate as they could be. So I found if we could just slow them down and strengthen their voice a bit, we got the clarity that we were looking for without having to try to change the way they're pronouncing their R's and their TH's and all that nonsense.
That's harder work.
It's hard work. And yes, can you change your accent? Of course you can. But most people have no clue about how much work that takes and how long it's going to take. And most people have better things to do with their time. So
exactly. So if you can speak a bit louder or stronger and then enunciate words properly, maybe speaking slower to do it, that solves a lot of problems right there.
That's exactly right. I often find that we gain the clarity we need without having to do that grueling pronunciation work. Now, having said that, Tom, I will admit that there are definitely cases where that kind of work is called for. But I was just finding in the majority of cases that I was working with, the clients were already, you know, basically fluent in the language. So they just needed to be more clear.
Are there any books, one or two books that you've read over the years that you could recommend people look through that are looking at ways that they can improve their speaking, their voice, their presentation skills?
There are, although I'm not going to mention titles, Tom, for the simple reason that, as I said earlier, training your voice is something that you do, not something that you know.
Right.
You can pick up some ideas and maybe even some exercises and things like that from a book. But it's a little bit like trying to learn how to play the piano by reading a book or learning how to play golf by reading a book. It's something that you learn by doing. And if you want to change that, then you get someone to watch you doing it and make some suggestions. Now, having said that, there are some great books out there, one by Patsy Rodenberg called The Right to Speak, which is originally written with actors in mind, but it's very accessible for the layperson. There's something out there by a guy named Roger Love. I can't remember the title of that book. I've never read it myself, but it seems to be quite well-known and popular. So there are books out there.
As you said, it's something that needs to be coached. There are some things that need to be coached. And I think maybe some people might be nervous thinking, well, geez, I'm so novice. I'm going to need to be coached for like 5 years at an exorbitant cost. But sometimes just to deliver or be a better speaker, I don't imagine you have to see people over 5 years every week like a chiropractor
exactly
would.
Right.
You can probably do some great work in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 sessions, right?
Yeah, if if you want me to just talk about numbers, I find that at this point in my work, and not every coach would work the same way, but in this point in my work, I can cover the basics in 3 to 4 sessions. Now, they're still going to have to practice to incorporate what they've learned, but I can give them a really solid foundation in 3 to 4 sessions so that if they continue to practice what they learned, you know, when I would see them 6 months later or a year later, there I would expect to hear a difference. So you're
right. Well, and as you said, a lot of it depends on practice, and a lot of people don't need to be the next Tony Robbins. So if in 3 to 5 lessons you can really help them with the basics so that they sound better, their content sounds better, they present better, that's a lot of what most people need, right? Not everybody needs to be the next Tony Robbins.
That's right. And I often joke with people that, you know, the actual skills you have to learn, it's not rocket science. It's really pretty simple. The hard part is, as we were saying earlier, learning how to pay attention to something you haven't been paying attention to before. That's the hard part. Developing the awareness.
That's the hard part. And then preparing and practicing and listening to your voice and recording some of your talks, which you mentioned right at the start, prepare, rehearse in advance. And usually if you do that part alone, that'll take away a lot of nervousness and hesitation when you're delivering a talk.
Oh, yes. When people ask me for tips on how to overcome nervousness around public speaking, rehearsal is always in my top 3.
Yeah, so useful, and a great form of feedback for people, too, to hear themselves.
That's right.
Now, what's your website, Jay, so people can find out more about what you do and how you can help them?
Oh, thanks for asking. It's voiceandspeech.com. So voiceandspeech, all spelled out, .com. That's it.
Ah, very good. Voiceandspeech.com.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I recommend that. I'll put it in the webpage I create to promote this show. But it's such a tremendously valuable service, and you don't necessarily have to be a CEO to use your coaching and the skills that you teach people. It could help you become a CEO faster, probably, to be a good presenter. But even if that's not your career path, it's still extremely important to be able to deliver a presentation properly. And it can certainly benefit people in their career. So I really understand what you're doing. I see the value of it. And probably the last message I want to kind of get to people is that, yeah, you don't need to be, you know, a CEO of a Fortune 500 company to look into improving your voice and your presentation skills.
That's exactly right.
Thank you so much for your time today, Jay. I really appreciate it. It's such an important topic for people in all areas of life, not even necessarily always business. I remember my dad having to get up to do a speech at a curling bonspiel of a bunch of heavy construction association, and I thought, wow, you know, dad is pretty good at that, pretty polished. He wasn't nervous. His voice was loud and clear. And so you never know when you'll be called upon to speak and when that skill can come in handy. So thank you so much for that. It's such an important topic, and appreciate the time you spent with us today.
It was my pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Have an amazing day.